Hello, I'm Matt Cholley, and this is Politics Without the Boring Bits. If you love it, tell your friends and maybe post a review wherever you're listening to this. Make that your New Year's resolution to post online more often. But can you believe everything online, though? Today on Politics Without the Boring Bits, we're taking a look at the way social media is already being flooded with election ads and what those ads tell us about the political party's strategy. And as Reform UK tried to grab the headlines, the columnists Alice Thompson and Robert Crampton discuss what impact they can really have. And if you like what you hear, you can join me for Politics Without the Boring Bits live on Times Radio, on your DAB radio, on your smart speaker, or download the Times Radio app. That's Politics Without the Boring Bits, weekdays from 10. Now, in these troubled times, it's important to keep everything in perspective. We need to be concentrating on the big issues. Forget war, famine, earthquakes, climate change. Forget the hospital waiting lists and crumbling schools and cancelled trains and cost of living crisis. The former Tory party chairman, Jake Berry, is tackling the big issue.
Now, I don't want to be a complete and utter killjoy, but I've just run the gauntlet here at Tesco's in Haslingden with my kids past all the discounted toys only to see that the Easter Bunny is already on the shelf. Easter, 31st of March this year. Let me know in the comments below whether you think Easter is coming to our supermarkets and shops too early.
Yeah, the latest political battleground is declaring war on the Easter Bunny. Why are there so many Easter eggs in the shops already? My favourite response to this, he posted that on social media yesterday. My favourite response to this was our very own Daniel Finkelstein. Catch him on the How to Win an Election podcast, wherever you get your podcast. He posted, "Thanks for asking my opinion. The availability of products in supermarkets should be primarily determined by what people wish to buy and what shops judge the most profitable use of shelf space, rather than whether MPs think it's the right time of year. That is a centre-right view." And 5 million people have now watched Jake Berry's video. I mean, who knows? Who knows what he's going to say about Cupid when Valentine's Day comes out?
The Columnists with Ali Burt, Alice Thompson and Robert Crampton.
And here they both are. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Not had you in. You've taken the start of the year by wearing the same colour.
Yeah, we're turning into each other. Yeah,
sort of burgundy.
Gone burgundy.
Yeah. Twins were matching.
Yeah. You look like you're working the same sort of upmarket hotel, maybe.
Yeah,
I was going to say.
I've never seen myself as a hotel.
I could see you bowl really? Hat outside door. Open
yeah,
the doors.
Doing the invisible hand washing. Yeah, yeah.
We're just saying we're looking smart, aren't we?
Looking a bit smart. Yeah,
yeah, it's
nice.
The beginning of the year. We're trying.
Yeah, new year, new you.
Mm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Have you read that the paper's burgundy is the thing that we should all be wearing?
Yeah, well, I think it's red, but that's a bit much for us, yeah. That was what it said today in our Times.
Oh, that's why you mentioned that in your column.
Exactly.
Have you worn red?
Yeah,
what's she talking
red?
About? Right, okay.
But I have got something I want to ban. I think that onions and sandwiches would be my thing.
Onions and sandwiches?
Yeah, I hate onions and sandwiches.
Excellent point, actually. I hadn't thought about that.
I was once, in my packed lunch, I had tuna and onion sandwiches.
Ooh.
And I threw them in the bin. And my stepmother, who worked at the school, saw me doing it, went mental.
Oh, no. Sorry. Very wasteful.
Yeah, but they were disgusting.
I don't like 5p pieces. A bit useless, aren't they?
That's what you stop. Well, maybe we'll see if we can get Jake Berry onto that.
Yeah, yeah.
He'll sort that out. Right, let's talk tax, because everyone's cross about tax, but nobody's necessarily promising to do anything about it. Mm. So the Labour Party this week unveiled this tax calculator listing, I think it was 12 taxes, that tax rises or stealth taxes that they thought were very bad. Lib Dems have listed the number of people, particularly in the South East, who've been dragged into paying more tax. But no one's actually saying they're going to do anything about it.
Is this going to be a tax
election in which nobody promises to cut them?
Yeah, well, I just think that the Tories have got away with saying they're the tax-cutting party the whole time, and they've been putting up taxes for years. I think, actually, for Labour to go on the offensive, I really like it. I think it's a good tactic for them, because they're always seen as putting up taxes, whereas, in fact, it's been the other party. I also don't like the inheritance tax cut. I think if we're going to have a tax cut, it should be fairer and further down and for more people, probably.
It's only 4% of people pay inheritance tax, I think. But they're sort of fencing around each other at the moment, aren't they? Sort of after you, no after you, kind of.
Yeah.
Whether it would be in the spring, and you know, nobody wants to unveil their hand, do they, before anybody else.
But it's weird, isn't it? Because maybe it's because I was on the boat halfway across the Atlantic. Yeah. But the Jeremy Hunt spent £9 billion in the autumn statement on this National Insurance Cup, which kicks in this weekend.
Yeah.
I don't get the feeling anyone's noticed that.
I think we're really cynical about it all now, because we know that it's not really happening. If you have a tax cut somewhere, you're going to get a tax increase in another place. And I think generally people just feel they're sort of overtaxed now in different places in different ways, don't
I guess
they?
They'll notice if it when it appears in their wage
packet. It's worth about £450, so over 12 months, an extra £40 possibly in your, you know.
That's not bad.
Easily disappears in your food shop or your petrol pump.
Yeah, but it's a tenner a week that you didn't have.
I suppose so.
Which is, for some people, that is...
Some people,
quite a lot of people, that's pretty important.
But do you think the Labour Party needs to promise tax cuts going into the election? Or
I think it needs to promise not to raise, which it already has done.
Yeah,
they said they won't raise top level of income tax, they won't raise CGT on, chairs and second homes and property, and they won't do a mansion tax, which is kind of all they need to do, really, isn't it?
Because to some extent, if they're going to win, which is what the polls at least suggest they are, they aren't going to have any money because there isn't any money, and they've got lots of promises to make on green issues and green issues. So why would you spend a load of money on promising tax cuts? Because you're the one who has to deliver them.
I think they may not just actually promise them. I think the thing is they're going to do what the Tories do, which is float it the whole time. Yeah. So they're going to keep saying, well, we may do this tax, we may do that tax. And actually, that's happened over the last few years. So I think I don't actually blame them for doing it, because what the Tories are going to do is turn around and keep saying, well, you're not helping anyone out. You know, you're just spending money. And I think it's a good tactic probably in the end.
It's also worth remembering that it doesn't necessarily, cutting income tax or whatever doesn't necessarily equate to the government having less money. There is, we've all heard of the Laffer curve.
Yeah.
At which point more people, it incentivizes people to work and more people pay their tax. So, which is a kind of Liz Truss argument.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's not necessarily untrue just because Liz Truss says it. There is a point at the margin where you can reduce tax a bit and get a bit more.
And also we know that Rachel Reeves quite likes taking other people's ideas, doesn't she?
Yeah. Oh, good point. Mm. Nasty.
Plagiarism.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't plagiarism, was it? It was Wikipedia.
It was not overseeing her researches, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I do think she's doing a pretty good job, Rachel Reeves, because she's looking serious, she's looking intent.
Sure, yeah.
And she's actually, you feel that she's not going to run away with the government's finances.
That's all they have to do. Theresa May lost an election on the basis of... The social care tax, or failed to win an election on the basis of that. So it's really tricky stuff. I think the less you say about it, the better, in a way. And as I say, Labour's not.
And it's a hard one, isn't it, for the Tories to point. I mean, when you had sort of Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell, then they said in the past, and actually a lot of what they said at the time. But when you've got Keir Starmer, Rachel Reeves, who no one would describe as radical, wild men of economics or politics.
Yeah.
It's quite that sort of playing the fear card of like either a tax bombshell or, you know, they'll run up a huge deficit or they'll be really irresponsible. I mean, they scream we'll do nothing, not we'll start the horses.
Yeah.
I think their biggest problem is actually what they're then going to do if they do cut taxes, how else they're going to save money. And, you know, it could be on green issues if you're the Labour Party, but I think that's going to be quite tricky.
That's looking vulnerable, isn't it?
Yeah. I think that's the one that may go first for Labour. And I think the Tories haven't said how they're going to cut any of their spending at all, have they really?
I mean, it always does. I mean, Cameron came in as a green guy and then the austerity and that was the first thing to go, wasn't it? And I suspect the same thing will happen.
Yeah. But actually the thing that I don't think the Labour Party have done enough of is putting the green stuff, making that an economic argument.
Well, that's right. I mean, that's what you need to do with the green stuff. You need to say that this is actually the future.
It's not tree-hugging. It's jobs and it's industry, you know, the stuff the Labour Party used to represent all those.
Yes.
And it's energy as well.
Retooling, it's energy, it's national security.
Yeah, there's whole chunks of the northeast which I'm familiar with, where I'm from, Hull, right up the coast into Teesside, which is increasingly reliant for jobs on sustainables now, on alternative energy. So it's manufacturing. It's all the things that the Labour Party and the unions should like. But they haven't really made that case. In fact, no one's really made that case.
Because it's sort of fallen to bed at Miliband. And they don't...
Well, yeah. And yes.
They don't let him out very often. let's talk about, in fact, talking about what's going on in the north, reform.
So we await
Richard Tice setting out their strategy and Nigel Farage playing will they, won't they.
Mm.
how big a part do you think they're going to be in the election?
I think they're pretty big. They're polling about 9% at the moment. That's nationwide. And presumably higher than that in some of the red wall seats that they're targeting. There's a lot of disaffected right-wing Tories out there, but there's even more disaffected formerly Labour voters who actually have turned out to be quite right-wing on many issues, which is what Tice is playing to, up in Hartlepool, and I think they're also standing in Blackburn, Bolton, in Lancashire, and I think they could be quite significant.
I actually really mind that the media's let them have so much airtime, though, because I think it is a problem that over the years, first with Nigel Farage and now Richard Tice, that the more right-wing parties do get a lot of time on air. And I think in the end that does have an effect. And that, you know, they have whipped up the whole immigration debate now. Now they've had the Brexit debate. They're always looking for some other way to divide everyone, particularly the Tory party. I think they've been phenomenally influential, actually, in the last two decades.
Farage has been...
You can draw a direct line, I think, from Nigel Farage on GB News in a boat on the channel and Rishi Sunak stopped the boats pledge. You know, there was the evidence suggests them talking about the boats problem more and more and more has actually just fueled support for reform, because for people who are concerned about that, they're never going to be doing enough. I mean, it was weird yesterday, James Cleverly saying he was going to have zero boats this year or something. Well, this is not...
I'm wary of the kind of blame the media thing because we hear this all the time that we get blamed for, and this is us blaming other elements of the media for a problem that we don't like. I think it's hard, but you have to accept the fact that there's an awful lot of people in Britain, not as many as we're led to believe, but a significant minority who are extremely concerned about the boats and immigration and wokeness and all the rest of it. And I don't agree with them, but I think we're in a democracy, and Reform UK catered to those people. You have to combat them politically.
But I also think it's going to be the Tory party's problem more than anyone else, because you can see that's what the Tory MPs are so worried about. They don't want their vote split by them, do they?
Well, I think it's going to be the Labour's problem as well.
The first thing Reform needs to do is invest in a new website, because it appears to be down while people are trying to get on it to find out what's happening out there.
Yeah, but people quite like that kind of homely nature about them, don't they? They like them being the little people that kind of, back. It's sort of David and Goliath.
But I don't think it is just a Tory problem, Alice. I think it could be that some of those seats that Labour's got to win back and would expect to win back in the North, it might pose more of a problem there for Labour, because... some of those people who voted Labour all their lives, then voted Tory in 2019, now we're required to vote Labour again,
might flip you about the other way. Yeah. It's interesting. So Reform's put out on January the 1st, there is an alternative. What we stand for is there are four pledges rather than the five. Quite similar to Rishi Sunak. Stop the boats is one. Higher wages.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Why not?
Net zero immigration.
Yeah.
So, which is currently, 700,000? They want to get that down to zero.
Then you'd have to get rid of all the foreign students, which would be pretty tricky.
And David Cameron couldn't get down to tens of thousands. And zero waiting lists. So, you go and see the doctor and you're on the operating table that afternoon.
I mean, you know what this sounds like? I mean, I don't want to cast any aspersions, but it looks a lot like National Socialism, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because on the one hand, you've got a kind of left-wing pledges high wages, and it's nativism and NHS waiting lists. And on the other hand, you've got
spending, but low taxes.
Yeah, and
small state.
And kick all the immigrants out.
Yeah, massive state.
It's quite familiar for those of us, with unhappy periods in European history.
Yeah.
Although I think voters have got more cynical, don't you think? I think actually they will look at it and say, well,
can't have everything.
You can't have everything, can you now?
No, and I think and people know that if you cannot stop or reduce migration without the NHS, the care system, and most of retail, certainly in the southeast, falling to pieces.
But it is a sort of message, isn't it? What they're saying is vote for us and protest.
Yeah. And I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? They as a protest party, you don't get the scrutiny. But I suppose
angry people and old people. I mean, it plays into what Alice is writing about today. It's all getting old, the country, but they still vote, and they're in the nature of being old. Unfortunately, people get a bit cheesed off about the way the world is, And that's what these parties are, and all across Europe, that's what they're doing.
And actually, if the two main parties, but particularly Conservatives, have gone into successive elections now and broken all those promises, why not make a load of promises that you're not? I mean, you're never going to have to keep them as your Reform Party because they're not going to get an MP.
Yeah.
You could just, send a message.
Yeah, press.
But it's what the Liberal Democrats used to do, and actually, they've got more mature and more grown up, haven't they? So you don't get them doing that anymore. And actually, most of theirs are really well costed their pledges.
Yeah, it's not all pie in the sky anymore, is it?
But they do also want PR. They want proportional representation reform, which is probably not a message they shout that loudly at traditional Tory voters who they are. Trying to woo. Just before we'll come on to talk about Alice's column in a minute, but on the subject of growing old disgracefully, the Danish Queen, Margrethe II. Yeah. Lovely palace. Have you been around the palace in Copenhagen?
I've seen it from the outside. Nice. I haven't seen it. As you'd expect. Yeah.
It is like a sort of mini
Buckingham Palace. Amelienborg or something.
But you're particularly taken by the fact she's 83 and she's been on the fags.
Well, it's good news for me because I'm one of the literally a dying breed of people who still smoke. But it's weird, isn't it? Because she's 83 and she's supposed to be on, I don't think she's on 60 a day now, but she has been in the past. She's
60 a day? I mean,
that's hard work, isn't it?
You really have to put your back into that.
You do, yeah. And
how many were you smoking at your peak?
When I was match fit.
Yeah.
About 10?
10 a day.
Yeah, I mean, I was a regular but sort of fairly moderate.
But that's quite a lot. That's more than 1 hour.
No, it's not.
Well, it depends on.
Unless you sleep for 14 hours.
Or you're smoking in bed.
In your gym jams.
But what interests me is that that's part of her popularity. I looked up the figures, only 1 in 8 Danes still smoke. That's slightly less than it is here. I think it's about 1 in 7 adults in Britain still smoke. Yeah, it's still seen as a sort of. Common touch, man of the people, woman of the people thing. It ought to make her less popular, but it doesn't.
Yeah.
It makes her more popular. And when people...
It was a bit like Camilla, though, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Do you know what? I think actually it's a bit like Princess Anne, to be honest. I think she really reminds me of her, the fact that she eats food
Margaret.
On the street.
Or Margaret.
That they're all... It's just a different sort of queen that we were so used to our queen being so upright and sort of perfect.
Yeah.
And this is the alternative, which I quite like, actually.
It's why Margaret became sort of the cult star, the early bits of the crowd.
And the Queen Mother was also from the same...
On the Dubai.
Yes.
Whereas Catherine's never going to be smoking, I can't see
that. I think this Queen Margaret is a rather nicer person than the Queen Mother or Princess Margaret were. She seems pleasant being Danish and sort of liberal and happy and living in a contented country.
Do you think Charles should do the same? Should he step aside?
I don't think he's had much time yet. I think
he's only had a year.
But I do think she slimmed down the monarchy. I thought she was very clever in saying to her second child, look, you're not going to have the titles. Because I always think that was the problem with Andrew. They should have said right at the beginning, look, you're not going to have the princesses.
Yeah, it was only a year ago. Mm. She stripped her second son's kids of all their royal titles, which is what maybe Charles should think about doing with his second son's children.
What he sort of has. Oh, we see. Yes.
His children. Yeah, they're still prince and princess, Lilibet and whatever he is, Archie. Yeah.
For someone who's not a royalist, you know quite a lot.
I write about this stuff all the time.
Obsessed.
Know thine enemy.
All those tea towels and commemorative tea towels you've got.
Do you know what Lilibet's second name is?
I've got a tea towel. My kids bought it for me just to annoy me.
Robert Crampton and Alice Thompson then. Don't forget, you can read the very best political analysis every day in the Times and the Sunday Times. Just get yourself a subscription at thetimes.co.uk.
The big thing.
Right, now, we know that 2024 is a big election year. And here's a warning. Your social media feed is about to get messy. With all the political parties targeting, I won't bother putting up billboards because they can get at you through Facebook, through Twitter, through TikTok, Instagram, whatever you're on, they're going to find you. In fact, in the last week of 2023 alone, the Rishi Sunak page on Facebook spent £30,000 on advertising, shifting from, it seems, the Conservative Party account to Rishi Sunak specifically. That's according to the group Who Targets Me, which campaigns for transparency over political online campaigning. Sam Jeffers is the group's founder and joins me now. Hi, Sam. So just explain what Who Targets Me is, what you're looking for, and what have you found about the sort of adverts that the Tories are buying?
Yeah, sure. So we've been, monitoring online political ads for the last, we're now in 2024, so it's 7 years since we started doing this, looking at, the ways parties are using ads to try and reach voters, really. So, what are they saying? Who are they saying it to? How much money are they spending to do it? And I think it's been really notable over the last week, and particularly a week where, you know, politics effectively switches off between Christmas and New Year, that Rishi Sunak, in fact, has spent £42,000 now on ads between the 25th and the 31st of December. So it's a really big amount of money. It's probably more than any individual UK politician has spent in kind of outside of election period. So it seems like a really significant hop up in the level of campaigning that's going on, and it'll be interesting to see how the other parties respond.
Now, it's a lot of money if I was doing it, but £42,000 when they've got millions and millions of pounds in their war chest doesn't sound like that much. So is it they crank it up a lot during election periods, or is exactly. it that actually just 42,000? How many people would you be reaching with that sort of spend? Because if you're not printing leaflets, you're not paying anyone to deliver them. How many people can you actually reach with that?
Yeah, it's hard to say exactly how many reach, but we think there's about 6 million impressions of the ad. So about 6 million ran across the country over the last week. So, you know, it's quite a lot. It's, you know, you probably reach a million people a day for about £10,000.
Oh, wow.
You know, that's unmediated, right? There's no one in the way of you saying what you want to say to those people when you reach them. And you can, you know, if you're doing it well, reach mostly the people you actually want to reach. So, you know, I think that's the thing here, is it's focusing in on, you know, ideally those voters that they think are going to win them the election, and spending, you know, effectively in a quite targeted way on reaching just those people.
So let's look at then, actually, this is one of the adverts we're talking about. This is a video of Rishi Sunak speaking to immigration officers in Downing Street. It was posted online yesterday alongside the caption, "Something has to happen. It cannot continue. Don't just take my word for it. This is what the people on the front lines think about stopping the boats."
What kind of things are you seeing and dealing with when you're out and about?
We deal with fatalities. That's the most horrific thing that we deal with. Whilst saying that, there's other horrendous conditions that they arrive in. You have children with fuel burns.
I mean, children with fuel burns. Yeah, that's one of the things your colleagues mentioned. It's absolutely heartbreaking.
What's the rules on this, Sam? Because I know it's Rishi Sunak's account, so it's not the Conservative Party account, but they're people, they are civil servants working, doing their jobs as civil servants, being used in a video posted on a political account.
Yeah, I mean, I think to be really picky, that one wasn't a paid ad. So I think that was an organic post. And I get very
detailed
on the difference. So the 42 grand was not spent promoting this particular message. This was one just posted on his account. And again, I'm a bit, you know, shady on the exact civil service rules of what that would mean. But, you know, the other ads that he's paying for are much more about just like and follow my page. Really simple, like follow me. And the idea is to build that kind of ongoing communications channel with voters directly.
But it's interesting, they're using party money to build the scale of the account to then use essentially government videos on it for party political purposes. Is, you know, it is definitely a bit of a grey area there.
Exactly. And there have been some really blurry examples of this in the past. So before last year's local elections, for example, the government accounts were running a lot of, like, we're investing money in your town. And then the moment the campaign kicked in, those ads stopped. And it was very grey area again as to whether or not that was political spending or kind of government spending.
That's really interesting. Sam, stay there, because I want to bring in a couple of other people who are very interested in this area. Kate Domett is Professor of Digital Politics at the University of Sheffield. Hi, Kate. Good to have you with us. And in the studio, I'm joined by Benedict Pringle, from who runs the blog politicaladvertising.co.uk, and follow all these things closely. Kate, every election I think that I've covered almost, it's been called the Facebook election. Is this going to be called the TikTok election?
Yeah, TikTok election, AI election. We'll definitely see a focus on, like, the latest digital aspect. We'll get a lot of attention. You know, I think it's kind of easy to focus on digital, and it will be a big site of the battleground. I think one of the things I always try and say is, like, you know, we will still see the billboards. We will still see, like, doorstep campaigning. But, you know, digital is going to be huge this time. And especially with the new spending limits, parties are going to be able to spend more than ever before on this kind of content.
And yeah, Benedict.
I do think that we will see a real TikTokification of...
it's easy for you to say.
...of this election campaign. And that's not to say that suddenly all the voters are on TikTok, because they're not. But what has happened is the impact of TikTok has impacted the way all the other social platforms work. So... short form video, I think, will be the sort of the main way in which parties will try and convince voters. So it'd be sort of 15 second videos, highly attention grabbing. And the reason for doing that is because that is what the algorithms favour. Another thing they favour is if in the past we have seen things online that kind of look like posters, almost graphics that are online, I think now we'll see what I would call more human-to-human communication, where you will see whether it's Rishi Sunak or Angela Rayner or whoever it might be talking directly to camera, talking directly to people, because that is what the algorithms favour. And that has been sort of led by TikTok. So whilst this election isn't going to be fought on TikTok, it is very much going to be shaped by what TikTok have done.
Kate, does that sort of change also the style of it? We move away from very glossy, high budget sort of, you know, the John Major, the movie, and Neil Kinnock, the movie, those sort of quite expensive, you know, it's a virtue at looking expensive. That actually becomes a virtue if it's a bit rubbish. It looks like you filmed it yourself, even if actually probably it's someone behind the camera doing it for you and it's been, you know, very carefully made to look rubbish.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, politicians don't want to look kind of polished and super slick on these platforms. They want to look authentic. They want to look personable. And, you know, they're trying to kind of create engaging content. And sometimes you'll see them try and act deliberately in a way that's a little bit counterintuitive. So, you know, be playful or like do a TikTok dance, because they kind of know that that will help drive engagement.
I suppose there was, as Jake Bowie's found to his cost this morning, you can go a bit too far. He posted this video online saying he was crossed at Easter eggs already in supermarkets. 5 million people have watched it, but most of them seem to be calling him a Wally for having done it. Let's take a couple of examples of adverts, videos that were posted online in 2019, both to see the, because actually it's interesting that they seemed quite sort of refreshing and new at the time, but now possibly feel like a bit dated, even though it's only been 4 years. This is Boris Johnson doing a candid video.
Hey, Boris, you all right?
I'm good. How are you?
What's been on your mind today?
Well, I can't hide it from you. I've been thinking a bit about this general election campaign.
And how do you typically start your day?
I tend to get up pretty early, and then I go down and take the dog for a walk, and dog does his business, and so on and so forth. That's my start to the day.
And he has a party, turned out. And then this was Jeremy Corbyn. And again, this is like a real fashion from 4 years ago of reading mean tweets. You know, they did a lot of this, particularly on a sort of American late-night chat shows and this sort of thing. This is Jeremy Corbyn reading mean tweets about himself while on YouTube.
I'll bet Jeremy Corbyn will be glad when this election is over so he can go back to wearing his commie hat. What is a commie hat? I wear a cap. It's a bit like when I was told I was riding a Maoist bicycle. It's a bicycle!
So, yeah, it's weird, isn't it, how that dates, Benedict?
Yeah, I think it does, but I think both of those videos, the leaders come across as authentic. So I think that sort of down-to-earth, real style, I think we'll see more of. I think they both sound slow to me. I think the pace of the videos have just increased massively. And I also think that along with that sort of down-to-earth style of the way the politicians were talking, I think in terms of graphics, digital overlays, lenses, editing styles, everything has become a bit more sort of high-paced and zany, and it's less stuffy than it ever has been before. And I'm wondering if that sort of high energy, less formal style of campaigning, which we're starting to see online, will permeate through into the offline as well. That will be something that's interesting to see.
And Sam, how do we know what people, because clearly if they put up a billboard, you know, anyone walking past can see the billboard and see the message they're putting. But if that, you know, because you can do very ultra specific targeting, you can pick, I want only women of this age in this town who are interested in children or the environment, whatever it might be. You can be very, very targeted. Is it possible to track all that the political parties are posting online as paid ads?
So increasingly so, but it's not perfect. So you know, since particularly since 2016 election, a lot of the big platforms have faced a lot of pressure to make this type of advertising much more transparent. So they built ad libraries where essentially all of the political ads that run on their platforms kind of go and stay up for a number of years. And that gives you some information about who's seeing those ads and where they're being targeted. It's not perfect, but it's better than it was. You also have some platforms that have totally run away from political advertising at all. So, in fact, when you talk about the TikTokification of election campaigns, TikTok doesn't accept paid political advertising at all. So you can't target, you know, younger voters there. You just have to put your content up and hope for the best. And, you know, they have some content libraries and you can see what's going on, but it's not straightforward. So you're trying to piece together this story from all of the available evidence. And you know, part of our mission as an organization is to try and push you know, the platforms to do better with that as well, so that we really can read this information in real time.
Is there a platform that's particularly good at it at the moment?
I mean, I think Facebook is the best of the available platforms at the moment. They have a kind of always on ad library. They give you some information about targeting and who's seen the ads. The information's updated, you know, pretty regularly. I think Google has a long way to go, to be honest. Like, they're very limited in the way that they apply their policies. You can't really see what's going on outside of election periods. They're very hit and miss as to who gets into their data or not. And, you know, and that's a big miss because, you know, over the coming months, the parties are going to spend, particularly on YouTube, a lot of money. Once the short campaign is going, they are going to buy a lot of video advertising on that platform.
And that's putting ads at the beginning of other videos you might be watching rather than, exactly, than standalone videos that you expect people
exactly
to click on.
And those tend to be the more polished sort of party political broadcast type ads. You know, they'll take a clip from that and run, you know, 30 seconds of it before you watch something else.
What's interesting about that is in this country, we don't think of ourselves of having a culture of election TV advertising. Mm. You know, you're not allowed to advertise on TV. But with YouTube, lots of people watch YouTube on their TV. So in this election, I wouldn't be surprised if election ads start appearing on people's TVs and people think, oh my God, you know, we're getting US-style election ads here, because that is a technology that exists and there's no regulation to stop it.
You might not know the answer to this. Is it possible to advertise on like the ITVX
not ITVX, but things like and all what is confusing at the moment is that all the different platforms like Amazon Freevee, which is a sort of a TV style thing, that they all have different rules as to what advertising they'll accept. But yeah, you will be able to advertise on some of them with an election message, but not all of them.
But it's like YouTube, if you're watching
YouTube, yeah, but not ITVX. And so you might be able to go on, I don't know, Pluto TV, but you wouldn't be able to go on Channel 4. So if you wanted to have a sort of approach where you were desperate to get on people's TVs, you'd probably be able to find your way into some nooks and crannies.
It's fascinating that. Kate, when we're talking about, you know, particularly the TikTokification, there we are. Does that mean, because it's getting shorter and it's more, you know, is it more vibes and less policy in terms of, you know, not communicating what you might do if you win, but just communicating that you're a good chap and you're a bit fun because you've only got 15 seconds to do it?
Yeah, we've seen a lot of emphasis on kind of personality politics. It's kind of followed what's going on in the US, really, and a real focus on individuals. But yeah, it's really about kind of that personal brand. It's quite rare to see policy statements in a lot of ads. You know, quite often, if you look at the examples from 2019, they're kind of broad statements of values rather than particular policy pledges.
And what about the other thing I wanted to ask about was particularly thing on well, now X, what was Twitter, the community note. Rishi Sunak fell foul of it yesterday when he posted, "I said this government would clear the backlog of asylum decisions by the end of 2023. That's exactly what we've done." And it ended up with a community note saying, "Legacy cases refer only to the people in the asylum system on the 28th of June 2022, the day when new asylum laws came into force." What is a community? It wants to explain what a community note is. Do you know better?
Well, it's almost like a sort of community-led fact-checking service. So if someone sees something on Twitter or X and believes that to be factually incorrect, someone can add a note to it, which you have to include a source and explain why what is being said isn't quite right. So I think it's a good thing for democracy and provided the system isn't abused. I think
and it's sort it's a bit like Wikipedia, isn't it? There's a sort of a critical mass of people and it gets approved, so it's not just anyone can post something on there.
That's exactly right, yeah.
It'd be interesting to see who else falls foul of it. So go on then, I'll come around all of you. Which political party in the UK, or maybe abroad, is particularly good at this? And who's particularly bad? Let's start with you first, Sam.
Oh, good at this. I mean, look, Joe Biden's campaign is the best resourced campaign in history for his re-election. They do a lot of good stuff. They target well. Everything is polished and slick, and it hits the right people. And you know, they would probably be the standard by which any other campaign would want to be measured, really, around the world.
Interesting, that better do.
Speaking of the TikTokification, in the New Zealand's general election in 2023, there was an agency involved in that for National, which was the winning party, called Topham Gearin.
And they've worked for the Conservatives.
They worked for the Tories in 2019, and I suspect they will be back this time. So they sort of TikTokified that their approach there. And there's some evidence to suggest that in making Chris Luxon, who is the leader there now, Prime Minister, sort of seem much more approachable, personal, through this sort of human-to-human style, which the algorithm favours, that his personal ratings improved using that approach.
That's so really interesting.
I think that that they've done that pretty well. They you know, beat an incumbent Labour government. And so I think if Topham Gearin are going to be involved this time, they'll be ones to watch.
Finally, UK.
I'd go for AOC in the US. So she's done quite a lot of quite clever uses of working with influencers. So kind of finding people who've already got their own audience online and then doing some activity like gaming with them so that she can get herself out to that particular audience. I think she's been experimenting for quite a while.
Yeah. It's a lot of work, though, isn't it? It's a lot of work. It's really, genuinely really fascinating. We see interesting to see what impact this has on our social media feeds. Benedict Pringle from the political advertising.co.uk website. Kate Dobbitt is Professor of Digital Politics at the University of Sheffield. And Sam Jeffers from Who Targets Me. Thanks for joining us. Thank you for listening to Politics Without the Boring Bits. If you've been with us for a while, why not tell your friends about us in person, or better still, on social media? If you want to get in touch with any thoughts or comments, you can email me, matt@times.radio. But for now, for me, Matt Chorley, it's goodbye.